thinking, and feeling your way through pediatric palliative care. That's an approach used by Dr. Chris Feutner of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Dr. Feutner is in Kansas City March 22nd for the William G. Bartholomew Lecture at the University of Kansas Medical Center, and he joins us now on the Bioethics Channel. Dr. Feutner, you had a chance to meet the namesake of this lecture, and he influenced you in your work, did he not?
Yes, I was very lucky years ago when I was a medical student doing research on a historical topic of the origins of diabetes treatment around the time insulin was discovered. I was out at the Clendening Collection at the University of Kansas and had a chance to spend a remarkable hour in Dr. Bartholomew's office talking about medical ethics. I remember vividly him seated across from me at his desk and the conversation we had about trying to help people become aware of ethical issues in the ever-changing medical environment where new innovations really present problems that people had never encountered before. And his insistence that part of the role of the ethicist was to not just help people think about what was going on, but to actually embody a kind of virtuous approach to standing up for what was right and being able to help lead people to confront things they might otherwise not want to have to face.
So somewhat closing the loop, you're returning to Kansas City, a University of Kansas Medical Center, and here you're giving the Bartholomew Lecture. That has some symmetry to it, doesn't it?
It's a great honor, particularly given how some of the comments that he offered to me had such a big impact on my own thinking and development.
Well, let's talk about what you will talk about. You're the keynote speaker for this lecture, and you're taking on some difficult issues. First, the idea of palliative care in pediatrics has to be difficult for parents and family members to accept in the first place. And past that, how hope and emotions play such an important role in how care might be delivered in that scenario. Is that a fair summary of what you're dealing with?
Well, it is a fair summary. I will pause, though, to reflect on the word difficult. Everybody wishes that these children did not have the conditions that they have and that the parents subsequently did not have to figure out what's the best way to be a good parent for children in these very difficult circumstances. For those of us who focus on pediatric palliative care, we would, again, love nothing more than to be able to make all disease and illness go away. But that isn't what we confront. We confront diseases that, despite our best efforts, remain progressive and tractable. And in those circumstances, our job is to figure out how to best take care of these children and help these families. In that realm, as I often say, parents need to not just think their way to the right or best decision, but they also have to feel that they're doing the right thing. And part of what I've been privileged to do over the years is to talk to innumerable children and their families as both a physician and as a researcher about the way that they are understanding what's going on and how they're thinking about and feeling about the decisions that they have in front of them. And part of the findings that we have as a research team come to is that you have to regard both the thoughts that they're having and the emotional reactions they're having to the situation as being equally important in helping to make decisions. And as a physician or a nurse or any member of the treatment team, you have to attend to both those levels in order to be able to provide adequate decision support. And that's what I'm going to be talking about.
That sounds challenging on a couple of different levels. One is it has to be, and I won't use the word difficult, I'll use the word challenging here, that challenging around the idea of researching and quantifying hope and emotions, number one, and then number two, being able to have that be something that a medical professional brings to the forefront to help families. Do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, so I'll take the first part, which is how do you ever study something like this? And then we'll come to the practical application second. Without doubt, when one talks about a concept as deep and rich as the concept of hope, there are many, many different definitions. And in part, that is one of the problems that the idea of hope actually has. That if I said, what are you hoping for, what does hope mean for you, I might have a very different idea in mind than what you might have if I were talking to you. And people tend to use the term hope as though everybody understands exactly what it means, when in fact, if you talk to a group of people, they may have quite different notions. So one of the things that we found when we talked to people about what does hope mean for you is that you have to ask that question, because it will have different meanings for people, and that nobody should presume that what I take to be hope in this situation is what the parent might take it to be or the child might take it. I have used a definition of hope that the psychologist Rick Snyder, who is also was a member of the University of Kansas community. Rick had, before he passed away, had developed a scale to look at hopeful patterns of thinking, ways of viewing what is possible in the world and your ability to potentially achieve it, to have a goal and have thoughts about your own ability to go after that goal, and then different pathways to potentially achieve that goal. Rick could come up with a hope scale, and that's what we've used in my research to look at these hopeful patterns of thinking that parents, that anybody actually has, and to see the degree that the way that people answer questions on this hope scale is related to the ways that they think about other aspects of medical care and ultimately how they make certain types of medical decisions. Without doubt, one could pick other scales or think of other ways of looking at hope, but that's the way that we've tried to operationalize it in our research. And I think that the end result is that it gives you some insights that, as I said at the outset, hope means many different things for different people. So you have to ask. It isn't one monolithic entity. It's a diversity of hopes. And that even in dire circumstances, people can still be hopeful for specific things, like I am hoping that I can be without pain. I'm hoping perhaps that I can be at home. I'm hoping that I can say goodbye to some people that I care about. That hope need not be only about cure or a miracle, and that even those hopes for cure or miracle can coexist with hopes about being free of pain, being at home, being able to say goodbye.
Well, Dr. Feudner, that sounds very similar to what we work with at the Center for Practical Bioethics, a lot of aging and end-of-life issues, and the concept of hope, and then also the concept of a moving goalpost as you go through a process of medical care, that sometimes things can change and the idea of hope might change as well. Would you say that happens in both arenas?
Certainly. The challenges that people face confronting serious illness are somewhat different across the age spectrum, depending on, you know, what their life experiences have been, but they're also very comparable. And in this regard, that the goals you have when you start an illness experience may be ones that need to change as treatments either work or do not work. And that concept, which we're working with quite a bit now, of what I call re-goaling, of actually deciding that the goals that we started with are no longer goals that we have to be pursuing now, is a very important concept that's surprisingly not really been looked at in a research setting all that much. How do people change their minds and say, I'm going to put this goal that I had when I started off to the side? I may not have to abandon it completely, but it's no longer my top priority. And instead, I'm going to shift and focus on another set of goals. We are very interested in helping our research community and the medical community to have a better understanding of how is it that people do this re-goaling.
You had said that we were going to talk about how to practically apply this in a healthcare setting. So let's talk about taking the concept of hope and doing some practical applications of that in a medical care setting.
One of the most potent findings, I said it at the beginning, is that you need to ask questions, that you need to ask people, be they patients, parents, at different points in their illness experience of what are you hoping for? And expect that in response to that question, they're likely to give a number of different answers, some of which are going to be hopes that are perhaps more of the nature of a cure or almost a miracle, and that's okay. People are allowed to hope for whatever they want to hope for, and that with a non-judgmental stance, hear that, acknowledge it, and ask also, what else are you hoping for? People, I have found, often have a multitude of hopes, and after stating one of these big hopes for a cure or a miracle, they often will have hopes like being pain-free or being able to get back to a certain baseline of health, perhaps not where they had been previously, but some level of function that matters to them, being able to go home, being able to participate in an event that's upcoming, and that those hopes are often of a smaller scale and are the kinds of targeted goals that people on the healthcare team can actually potentially help the patient achieve, help the family achieve. And that opening up this dialogue of the range of things that people are hoping for allows a range of options to be put on the table and for healthcare to actually be pursuing things that we potentially can achieve and getting people motivated and invested in actually doing that type of care. Those questions of what are you hoping for and do you think it would be helpful if we focus on trying to go after this particular hope and see if we can make that happen. Those questions and that kind of dialogue can have a very helpful effect on shaping medical care.
Well, Dr. Feudner, if we could snap our fingers and tomorrow this concept was totally integrated into healthcare, not just at the pediatric level, but all through the medical system, what would the medical system look like? How would people engage with it differently?
I must point out a lovely but very hypothetical stance of if we could do it. I think that there's many impediments to actually having the communication skill set to be able to really have those kind of conversations. So one thing, in order to snap our fingers, I think we have to build skills in a range of healthcare providers so that they feel much more comfortable having these types of conversations. Second is, I think we often miss the point that much of healthcare is actually remarkably effective at what it aims to do. And, you know, certainly in the pediatric setting, most of the children who walk into the hospital or are carried into the hospital leave the hospital effectively better. And that's really remarkable. So if we were to talk about to a typical parent of a child being admitted, what are you hoping for? And they said, I want my child to get better. That's what we're all aiming for. So in the vast majority of pediatric encounters, I actually teach residents to ask that question so they get comfortable asking it, particularly when that is the goal that everybody has. Where this becomes more important is where the effectiveness of medical care to achieve those large return to health type of goals, where medical care is not as powerful as we have presented it to the public as being, where it has greater inherent limitations as to what it can achieve. In those settings, being able to have an honest discussion about what medicine can and can't do, in conjunction with a open and heartfelt conversation about what people are hoping for, I think would better enable people to be able to understand the situation that they're in and better able to start to accommodate and adapt to what's possible, given what medical care can do for them and what it cannot do for them. And making sure that those two remain in balance, because even in situations that are very, very difficult to treat, we can always do things to help the patient, and that even if the treatment can't make the disease go away, we can always take care of the patient.
Dr. Chris Feutner is Director of Research and the Pediatric Advanced Care Team at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.